Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Oh, baby. Did you survive the week? There were a lot of people in this town over the weekend. Good morning, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU, and I am honored to have a U.S. congressperson in the room with me right now. Celeste Molloy. How are you, Celeste?
I'm doing well.
Good to see you.
Beautiful Easter weather. I'm ready to start another week of work.
Yeah, I knew you before you were a congressperson.
That's true.
You're pretty big deal now, so. We were talking before we went on the air. This was not a life goal, an aspiration for you. You're like, hey, someday I want to be in Congress. That was your target, and yet here you are.
Yeah, no, I have to keep admitting this over and over. I don't know why, but I failed at all my life goals. What I wanted to do was get married, have a bunch of kids, and live on a farm somewhere. Mm. And I am doing none of those things.
Yeah, but you affect a lot of farmers in what you do.
Yeah, and I take that seriously.
And
I try
kids.
To keep that in mind when I'm doing my job, because I do recognize, even though this wasn't my life goal, I recognize that I'm really blessed to be where I am, and very few people get to join this club that I have now joined.
Yeah,
and
pretty big deal.
I try to make sure that I keep that in the front of my mind every day when I'm working hard, when I'm tired, when I'm getting to do cool things, that this is a rare opportunity.
You even have your own website, don't you?
I have a couple of them, actually. A
couple of them. So I don't have a website. I mean, our station does, but I don't have my own. That's pretty cool.
Well, so, if you work hard, someday.
Someday? Well, I'm not going to ever be in Congress, I can tell you that, because, of course, you probably said that once, too. But
I said that a lot of times.
I have no desire to do that. Neither did you, I know.
No, until the day I did.
Until the day you did. Well, I'm glad you are, and I'm glad you're representing us here District 2, I guess, or whatever, in Utah. Tell everybody again what your district is. I think a lot of people don't know, but your district is a big one.
Yeah, geographically, I have by far the biggest district. Sorry, I got a tickle in my throat.
She's got
biggest district in the state.
Dr. Pepper Zero, by the way, which should help her get through this coughing. Coughing. I'm drinking the fully leaded stuff over here, but
I'm trying to live to be 50, so we'll see how that goes.
I made it. I'm almost 60, so
good job. Yeah. Drinking.
My dad. My dad turns 90 next month. He drinks Dr. Pepper too.
So. Fantastic. So you heard it here, folks. Dr. Pepper is an actual medical device that keeps us all alive.
Well, do you remember last year there was a story of a lady 104 years old, and she said to the interviewer, she said, I'm 104 and I drink two Dr. Peppers a day. And she said, I've had every doctor for the last 50 years tell me not to do that, and guess what, they're all dead and I'm still here. So
you go.
Anyway.
I have no reason to quit then.
Good for you.
No,
good.
My district, I always tell people, mm-hmm. from Utah, it goes from Lagoon to Zion National Park and over to Lake Powell, because I think that helps people kind of get a picture in their mind of how much ground I really have to cover.
That's a lot. Now, it comes down the west side, right?
Yes. So I have the whole west desert. I only have the west side of Juab County. I don't have Nephi. So when you're driving I-15, it's kind of hard to picture how my district could be one district, but you have to picture the whole state. I don't have any of Utah County, and I don't have Nephi, but I have the whole west desert. So it's all one continuous piece.
And how much of the Salt Lake County do you have? Do you have like the west half of the county, or?
No, all four districts have parts of Salt Lake County.
So you got a quarter of it.
Yeah, roughly. I have a quarter of the population. I think I have a little more than a quarter of the land, but I have a lot of downtown Salt Lake. I have half of West Valley City, all of North Salt Lake, all of South Salt Lake, part of Mill Creek. So you can kind of picture how a line goes down through all that, and then I have everything west of there.
Yeah. Is it hard, Celeste, to, not cater, that's not the right word, but to serve all the different types of people in the district? Because West Valley and St. George are very different.
Yeah.
And Cedar City, you know.
Oh, for sure. I remind the rest of the delegation all the time that my district is much different than the other districts. Mm. And the stat I use to explain that every time is that 40% of my voters are in Salt Lake and Davis County. 40% of my voters are in Washington County. The other 20% are in the 10 rural counties in between.
Wow.
So on Super Tuesday in Utah, when we did the presidential preference poll at caucuses, mm-hmm. up there in Salt Lake and Davis County, Nikki Haley got like 74% of the vote.
Really?
Down here, she got like 12. And those are equally balanced parts of my district.
Yeah.
So it is tricky meeting everyone's needs. But I think when you dig below, you know, who voted for whom on Super Tuesday, what you get is everybody wants a strong economy. Everyone wants their kids to be able to buy houses someday and get out of their basement. Everyone wants to be able to retire. Everybody wants to be able to live their life as unimpeded by government interference as they can. And so when you drill down to that, then it's not as hard to represent West Valley City, where they have their own problems that are different than St. George.
Yeah.
But at the core, they need less government interference, a strong economy, and opportunities for their kids and housing. What do we need here? Less government interference, a strong economy, opportunities for our kids, and housing. So it's the same.
Yeah, it's the same. Are you old enough to remember Ronald Reagan's presidency? I know you were.
I was born.
Okay.
5 months after he took office.
Okay, so no.
But I watched the Reagan movie on a plane this week.
Uh-huh.
So I'm ready. Let's talk Reagan.
The dude. First of all, he's one of my personal heroes. I love Ronald Reagan, and I thought, by the way, Dennis Quaid did a fantastic job in the movie of portraying him.
He did, and I don't remember the actress's name that played Nancy Reagan, but she killed that part.
Yeah, she was awesome too. Ronald Reagan used to say the most dangerous words in the English language. I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yeah.
And I believe that too. It goes into exactly what you were just saying. We want our lives unimpeded by government.
Yeah.
And that kind of includes taxes too.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people are all over the place right now about DOGE, but that's why I love DOGE.
Yeah.
Because they're looking through all of this government and bureaucracy we have and saying, where do we have redundancies? Where are we spending money we don't need to spend? And where are we just doing things the way we've always done them? I don't know why I have a tickle in my throat now.
It's my fault. I'm sorry.
Where are we doing things the way we've always done them? But we could be more efficient with AI. Or we could have fewer people doing the same job.
Yeah.
It's time to do that. We have a ton of bureaucracy. We're paying for all of it. So love or hate Elon, however you feel about any of the personalities involved, it's hard to deny that it is time for us to look at our bureaucracy and start trimming the fat.
I was at a wedding this weekend, and I got sat at a reception, you know, sat at a table with a couple we didn't know, and we just got talking, and we kind of started reflecting back on, I don't know if you remember this, but and it may have been in the 80s or 90s when you were really young, but there was a joke that it was like kind of a joke, but that the government had paid $1,200 for a hammer and a toilet was like $12,000 or something, and how everyone, that's so funny, the federal government would pay, But while we were laughing about it, I think all of us were going, did that really happen? Did they really pay that much for that stuff? And the truth of the matter is, yes, and that's why when you look at some of the federal government programs, you go, you know, wink, wink, it costs a lot of money. Yeah, well, the feds are going to pay for it, so it's fine. But it's not fine.
I mean, the jokes have been around since the Depression, right? Like, you can get yourself a government contract.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be a joke. Government contracts are paid for by tax dollars.
Right.
So if a government contract is your key to getting wealthy, you better be offering something that's worth that to the American people. And we haven't taken a critical enough look at that. And in addition to that, I think the government's gotten used to not being as transparent as it should be with people. And so now we're having these conversations about, like, USAID. What do they do? Where is this money going? What is the value of soft power on the world stage?
Who ever heard of it before last year?
and if what we're doing through that agency does keep the world safe and stable, then we should have been telling that story all along.
Yeah.
What you cannot do as a government is shroud things in secrecy and spend tax dollars on them. And then when someone wants to pull back the curtain and see what you're doing, get really defensive and say no one should ever question, like, government should be questioned. We should be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
People should be able to explain why it's worth spending taxpayer dollars on whatever it is we're doing, even if it's soft power influence in the world.
Yeah. I use the analogy, Celeste. Imagine going to a doctor, and after your doctor's examined, he says, well, you need surgery. You say, well, okay, I need surgery on what? Well, I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, is it going to, is something broken? I can't really tell you that. Is it going to fix something? Am I going to die? What's in the doctor? I can't really tell you that. That's kind of how the secrecy of federal government has become.
And especially if the doctor condescendingly said, I can't explain it to you because you wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
And that's attitude that's coming out of a lot of government. Like, well, you rubes out in America don't understand how important our work is, so we're just going to keep taking your tax dollars and doing things with them, and we don't want you to look at what we're doing. And it's just been the wrong attitude for a long time.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about the 80-20 rule, and I think a lot of people are like, what does that mean? And it has to do with politics. You want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really popular thing to talk about right now, 80-20 issues. And they're the issues that 80% of Americans agree with and only 20% disagree with.
So these are issues that most of us think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Like, I do politics for a living. I would love to have an 80% approval rating. Yeah, I can't imagine how high I would be riding if I had an 80% agreement on anything I was doing.
Yeah.
So when you find an 80% issue, you really want to own that issue. Mm-hmm. And right now what's happening, sort of inexplicably, it's a little confusing, is that Democrats are taking a bunch of 80-20 issues and fighting the 20 side of it.
That doesn't make sense.
And they're willing to die on these hills where they're just really out of step with the majority of Americans. And, you know, I spend most of my time with Republicans when I'm in Washington, D.C., because that's how a two-party system works. But I do spend some time with Democrats, especially ones that are on committees with me. And I really think a lot of them don't get that the issues they're dying on are 80-20 issues. I think they have a feedback loop, and it's something everyone should be careful of. If you only talk to people who agree with you, then you're going to start to have an outsized opinion of how many people agree with you.
Yeah.
And it happens in all aspects of life. But right now, Democrats are, you know, they want to fight tooth and nail to protect an MS-13 gang member who got deported as a Venezuelan gang member when they were actually an MS-13 gang member. Like, that's a strange hill to die on.
It is.
And look, I'm a lawyer. I think we should be careful. I believe in due process. I think, you know, sure, the heavy hand of government is a problem. Even when it's an issue I disagree with, I'm all for holding our systems accountable.
Right.
But fighting to get an MS-13 gang member back to the United States is a strange issue for Democrats.
You mean the Maryland man that they keep calling him?
Or you know, the transports issues are clearly 80-20 issues, but Democrats do not believe it. They really think the majority of Americans want their kids to be the tip of the spear in these culture war issues, and most people don't. Like,
no.
Suburban moms are not dying to have their daughters in locker rooms
with
biological boys. And taxes, you know, Americans want the Trump tax cuts renewed. If we don't renew the Trump tax cuts, that's going to be the biggest tax hike on American families in modern history. Democrats are willing to die on that hill. And I don't understand why.
Makes sense.
And even the deficit. Like, they'll argue the opposite of what Donald Trump argues no matter what. Most Americans want the deficit to shrink.
Yeah.
But every time we try to cut something, Democrats go out and defend whatever it is we're trying to cut. And hopefully they keep doing it for the next year and a half. Because if they do, then we can hold the House in the midterms. History's not on our side. When the same party holds the House, the White House, and the Senate, they tend to lose the House in the midterms. And if we do that, we're going to spend the second half of the Trump presidency on impeachment proceedings.
Stalemate, yeah.
If Democrats keep choosing these 80-20 issues and owning them and being loudmouthed about them, then we'll be able to hold the House in the midterm. And then we've got 4 years to get these good things done, like securing the border, fixing the economy. And if Trump has 4 full years, the start of fixing the economy is rocky. And I know people are seeing that right now.
Right.
With tariffs and cuts, the stock markets are kind of reacting erratically. And we need a little bit of time for all of the changes to work and stabilize, because people want predictability in the markets. If those can stabilize for 4 years or for 3 years after the first year, then it gives the American public time to see, oh yeah, this plan actually works. So that we don't have a violent overreaction to it where we cause more instability.
Right. Do you think President Trump knew that the stock market would react so volatilely? I guess that's a word. It would be so volatile to his tariffs and stuff?
I don't know. You know, all the talking heads keep saying in his first term, Trump paid a lot of attention to the stock market and it made him too cautious on some of these issues. Hmm. And in his second term, he's not paying as much attention to the stock market because the bond market is where you really pay attention. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend I know what's going on in President Trump's head. But I do know that he feels like he has a calling to save our economy, to save America. And so if he has to ignore the stock market for a while to do that, he's going to ignore the stock market. And right. The tariff thing was always going to cause upheaval in the stock market. When you upset the status quo with trade, the stock market reacts.
Yeah.
But he said he was going to upset the status quo. That's what he got elected on.
That's right.
And he won the majority. He won all seven swing states.
Yeah, we wanted the status quo to be upset.
I mean, the process hurts a little bit. Yeah. And that's a real thing. I'm not going to pretend that people aren't feeling a pinch. There are jobs going away. Yeah. There are companies in Utah that export to other countries that, you know, they're feeling the pain right now. I'm hopeful that it'll settle soon and we'll be glad we took the short-term pain for the long-term gain.
Yeah.
But the short-term part is making a lot of people really uncomfortable. And so I keep reminding people, don't react to the short-term news cycle. There are a lot of people out there who make a living telling you you should be furious all the time. Well, be very skeptical of those people.
Those people and the Democrats are telling us that Trump is destroying America and ruining everything right now. And we need to just, you know, we need to hang in there.
Well, and I get a lot of phone calls from people who are upset about things that haven't happened yet because someone told them that this is how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And like, as human beings, we can't stay outraged all the time. It's emotionally taxing. We're wearing ourselves out.
Yeah.
If we can just stay calm, watch some things play out, I think we're going to realize we're going in the right direction. But when you've been going in the wrong direction for a long time, changing direction causes some waves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like raising kids. You got to pick your battles. If you're mad at your kid all the time or they're mad at you, you're in big trouble.
And then what have you got left when there's an actual problem?
Yeah. You're out of gas. You're right about that. All right, let's talk about this budget. You said some people are unhappy. Or I don't know what's the feeling you get about the budget.
I think people are just really confused. So we're working on a reconciliation process, and one of the steps in that process is a budget resolution. So a lot of people think we passed a budget, and we didn't. It's a budget resolution.
Resolution. Okay.
But we passed one in the House in when was it? February? Mm-hmm. I think in February. And then the Senate passed theirs, and then we just last week voted again in the House. But the reason we had to do that is because the House passed a budget resolution, and the budget resolution is just instructions to the chairman of the committees of how much they have to find in savings.
Okay.
So we passed a budget resolution that cumulatively told the chairman in the House to go find $1.5 trillion in savings over the next 10 years.
Wow.
$1.5 trillion over 10 years is pretty ambitious, but it's not, like, it's doable.
Okay.
When the Senate passed theirs, called for $4 billion in savings in the next 10 years. Yeah, okay. I can see, if you can't see Andy's face, he looks really skeptical.
Yeah.
But here's why that is not quite as upsetting as it sounds. Those are floors. So on the House side, we decided to hold ourselves to a really high standard, and we set a really high floor to make sure we get there. The Senate set a really low floor.
I was going to say, that's like one piece of one program cut.
Yes. But part of the reason is the House has been working on reconciliation. You know, Speaker Johnson anticipated the trifecta when the talking heads were all telling us that we were going to lose the House and that, you know, Kamala Harris was going to be our next president. Mm-hmm. He saw the writing on the wall and realized we were going to have an opportunity to do reconciliation. And our chairman and our House leadership have been working on this for months, since last summer. The Senate has been busy doing confirmations. They have not had the time to dig into this. And so we have chairmen who already have a pretty good idea of what they can cut and by how much. And they did the math, put it all together, said, this is a safe floor. We think we can definitely get in above that. Because you can come in as high above that floor as you want, but you can't come in even a tiny fraction below.
Right.
The Senate hasn't had the time to do that work, so they set a really low floor.
They're just like, we're gonna.
Yeah, we'll cut at least $4 billion.
We know we can do that.
They can cut $4 trillion if they want, but they have to cut at least $4 billion.
$4 billion.
But when they adopted their budget resolution, they included our House instructions.
Oh.
in order to move forward, we have to have identical bills. So then we had to pass one that included theirs.
Okay.
Before we voted in the House, Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune held a press conference and said they're shooting for our number. And that's how, with the small margins we have in the House, if people were very skeptical about getting there, we would not have been able to pass the second one in the House. But with all those reassurances, with President Trump being the coach of our Republican team right now, saying we're going to get there, people felt like they could vote for it. But I get a lot of angry phone calls about things that are in the reconciliation bill. The reconciliation bill is being written right now. If you think you know what's in it, you're
wrong.
Yeah, you have some powers of divination that I don't have.
Magic.
So if you're mad about something you think is in the reconciliation bill, just stay calm for a little bit. But that is the one big, beautiful bill that everyone's talking about should be happening next month.
Nice. All right. Celeste is here. Let me get a break in, and then she only has another 10 minutes or so with us because she has some prior commitments. But we'll get a quick break in. More with Celeste Malloy after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 931 on KDXU. It's great to be here this morning. Celeste Malloy is with me here on the air as well. Hi, Celeste.
Hi.
I appreciate you being here. Celeste is a member of Congress. Wow, it's a pretty big deal. Do you sometimes go, am I really? Really? Is this real?
Yeah, I think that a lot. And actually, yesterday, I went to church with my parents for Easter. Mm-hmm. And so I was around a lot of the people I grew up with.
Yeah,
and that's when it's the hardest to believe.
Yeah. Are like, little Celeste, you're what? You're Congressman Malloy?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool, though. It's nice. And the some would say it was a meteoric rise, right? I mean, you kind of, you know, meteoric. We got a meteor shower tonight, by the way, the Lyrid meteor shower tonight.
Okay.
A shooting star. You're a shooting star, though.
Hopefully I don't burn out quite that fast.
St. George has been named as, I guess, the best small town to start a business by Wallet Hub. And I've read the thing. They go through a whole bunch of metrics on why it would be good. But one of the metrics is that small businesses don't fail as often here as they do in other places. But it's a good place, huh?
Yeah. Well, and I think the real success story is how many towns from Southern Utah are on the list.
That's right.
But, you know, not to stoke local rivalries or anything.
Oh, here we go.
This is the first year St. George has been number one. It's been stuck at number three, competing with Cedar City and Washington. And I love all of them, but I'm sure people who are listening right now are really excited to see St. George finally get to number one.
Now, you lived in Cedar City how long?
Well, it depends on, all told, about 8 years.
8 years, okay.
And I lived here for four, so.
I lived in Cedar City for about 10 months when we first moved down here. And so.
Summer or winter?
It was actually late winter to early winter. So it was kind of mostly warm.
Yeah.
There was a big snowstorm. The weekend we moved out, a big snowstorm, and I was like, we got to get out of here, man.
Yeah.
We moved to Hurricane. And then I lived in Hurricane and St. George and Washington and Cedar City. So I'd been all around. But I got a taste in living in Cedar for almost a year of the rivalry. I mean, it is palpable in Cedar City. They have a St. George rivalry.
I think it still exists more in Cedar City than it does here, too.
Yeah.
I live in Cedar City, and St. George has grown so fast in the last few years that there are so many people who live here who didn't live here 5 years ago and didn't live here 10 years ago.
So they don't know.
And that rivalry is really, it's mostly a generation old.
Yeah.
So people who, you know, have lived in either town for more than 40 years, like, the rivalry is still very real with them. Everyone else, it's sort of like, in fact, I think most people here in St. George are probably surprised that anyone ever considered Cedar City a rival. But when I was a little kid, I can still remember when Cedar was bigger than St. George.
It was. And Cedar had the university, you know, at Southern Utah University, and we had just a little junior college here. And no, I understand. And in fact, I have a friend, he's a lifelong Cedar resident. His name is Clive. I don't know if you know Clive. He was a former assistant coach at Cedar High. But he said, yeah, we used to call people from St. George those dirty sorghum lappers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not sure. I don't even hardly know what a sorghum is. I guess it's some kind of vegetable. It's sweet.
It's what molasses comes from.
Okay. Well, yeah. So you're already, you're a farm girl. You know this kind of stuff. I don't.
But I heard that a lot.
Yeah, did you?
And people from Minersville are pumpkin rollers. And you
really?
Know, like the old school rivalries still exist. But I think a lot of people who live in any of those places now don't know that. they don't know what sorghum is. They also don't know that sorghum used to be a cash crop here.
Yeah, and in Washington County, a big time was. Yeah. And I think the fact that the thing I felt with the rivalry was Cedar was bigger and St. George was growing and growing and growing. And I moved about the time St. George got to be the same size or got bigger than Cedar City. So for me, it was like I was like kind of in the middle of the rivalry as far as knowing.
Yeah.
But I think there is a little bit of the we don't like St. George because they stole our thunder feel a little bit.
I don't dare weigh in on that one.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah, and for a long time, there was only one high school in each town.
Right. Dixie versus Cedar, yeah.
And now that there's so many high schools down here and there's two up there, it just, the rivalry has changed, except in the hearts of the people who were there at the time.
I felt like when I moved, so they had just opened Pineview not too long before I moved here. So there were two high schools here. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's Hurricane as well. But Canview wasn't open yet. Snow Canyon wasn't open yet. And so I still feel like the rivalry was fairly strong if you threw in Pineview too. So it was Cedar versus Dixie and Pineview. But once Snow Canyon opened and then you had Desert Hills and you had Crimson Cliffs and up there you had Canyonview open. Maybe the Canyonview one opening might have been the biggest factor of all of it because then you had kind of a division of Cedar City too.
Yeah, every town had an in-town rival instead of having to have the rival that was 50 miles away.
And you could argue now the biggest rival for Cedar is Canyonview, not Dixie or any other St. George school. And you could argue the biggest rival for, say, Dixie might be Snow Canyon or Pineview or you know, Desert Hill. Who knows? But it's not really Dixie Cedar anymore. My friend tells me he went to Dixie years and years ago, but he says, we used to go out back after basketball games and get in fist fights with the Cedar people. And of course, now you go to jail for that kind of stuff. Don't do that anymore, kids.
Times have changed.
They have changed quite a bit. Celeste, anything Senate-wise, or not Senate, but Congress-wise that we need to know about before you go, because we have like 3 minutes left tonight.
Yeah, just, you know, we're busy at work. I know a lot of people I talk to say, where's Congress? What's Congress doing? Everything's coming out of the executive branch. We are busy doing all the things we need to do to make the executive branch successful and to hold the executive branch accountable. A lot of people are worried about that too, but that is our job. We are a separate branch. We're working on the reconciliation package. And doing that in the first 6 months of a Congress is a really, really ambitious goal. I'm not sure everyone realizes just how much we've taken on. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. We're busy working on FY 2026 appropriations. We're really working on getting that done through regular order like people have been asking us to. And the Senate has been busy confirming nominees. And now they're working on reconciliation, too. So we have a lot going on in Congress. I don't know if people realize the tough schedule the Senate's been keeping and how much work we've been churning out, because the headlines are all about what the new administration is doing. And it's been great to see them moving so quickly and following through on campaign promises. But in order for those to stick beyond this presidency, it's going to take Congress. And we're working on that, too.
If Congress doesn't do it, then the next executive that comes in will go, well, I'm going to undo everything he just did, if they want to.
And that's the problem we've had for too long, is that too many things get done by executive order, and executive orders are subject to being turned over by the next executive. Now, to be fair, laws are also subject to being changed, but Congress just doesn't move as quickly. And so if you codify something, it doesn't get turned over as quickly or as on such a small whim.
Just your quick thoughts. I know we only have a minute left, but in the House of Representatives, every 2 years there's an election. Do you feel like you have to get stuff done in the first, say, 14 months, 16 months?
Absolutely.
Because that last 6 or 8 months is all election stuff.
Well, we'll be getting stuff done in the last 6 or 8 months. The reason I feel like we have to get things done early on is to show people why they should keep us in power. As Republicans, we have all the levers right now. And if we can get the tax cuts renewed, get, spending cut, get some of these things done. The border's under control. No one's talking about that like they should be. That was huge.
Yeah.
But it happened quickly, and now everyone's moved on to everything else. If we can bring back some of those wins, then that's our argument for why we should stay in power and keep making these good choices that are good for Americans. If we can't get it done quickly, then people can't see the results when they go to vote in the midterms, and then that's when we lose.
All right. She's Celeste Malloy, U.S. House of Representatives. Celeste, thanks for coming in today. It's always a pleasure. I know you could phone it in, and a lot of people have to do that, but it's just great to have you in studio.
It is always a much better back and forth when I'm here in person, so thanks for always letting me come in.
All right. We'll take a commercial break. Back with more after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Andy, 945 on KDXU. Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks to, again, Celeste Malloy for spending a few minutes with us, letting her know what's happening and the budget resolution and all that stuff. There is no budget yet, but there's a resolution, which she says is basically instructions to the committee to on what to do, on kind of the very minimum they need to do. So I thought that was kind of fascinating. She says if people are complaining about the budget and they know what's in the budget, well, they're lying because the budget's not out yet. There is no budget yet. It's being written right now. So from the headlines today, this is interesting to me. So Governor Spencer Cox says, hey, let's declare a state of emergency in Washington County. Or he hasn't done it yet, but he's thinking about declaring a state of emergency for Washington County. And what that would do is release a bunch of federal and state dollars to help help us deal with our severe or extreme drought, I guess is what is being called right now. And what all that means to me is kind of nothing, right? I mean, what you can't throw money at water. I mean, it doesn't work. You can't bribe God to make it rain more or snow more up in the mountains. It that doesn't work. So I mean, yeah, there are things they can do to mitigate or whatever, but the bottom line is you can't declaring a state of emergency wouldn't really, in my opinion, help a whole lot. Plus, you know, Zach Renstrom hasn't come out and said, we don't need that. But he has come out and said this. He said, look, our reservoirs are mostly full and our tanks are full and we're in good shape for this summer. Or if we have a long, hot, dry summer, it's not going to be, you know, a cakewalk. But he said, well, we're good. We're covered. We have enough water to make it through. Now, if we don't get water next rainy season, next winter, then there could be some problems. You know, if we don't get a snowpack for two consecutive years, we could have some issues. But right now, we're good. And so to me, to have, it's almost like Spencer Cox is like, you know, I haven't really talked about Southern Utah a lot lately. And there was this article in the Tribune about water and how about I tell everybody I'm thinking about state of emergency? Maybe then Southern Utah will think I'm paying attention to them. That's what it feels like to me. Maybe I'm way off base. Maybe I'm wrong here. But it feels like to me Spencer Cox is going, yeah, I haven't really talked about Southern Utah in a while. I need their votes. I need their support. Let's go ahead and talk about them now. Yeah. That's to me, that's what it's all about, this story about and this press conference he had talking about the potential of declaring a state of emergency for Washington County. Again, if you want to talk about water, you get Zach Renstrom and you ask him about water. And Zach will be on the show, by the way, Wednesday morning at 9:08. We'll be live on the air with Zach Renstrom. I think tomorrow we've got police officers on the air, so I'm going to look because I don't want to lead you astray. So I'm checking my calendar right now. St. George Police Department tomorrow. And Tiffany Mitchell, who is the public information officer with, police department, is, told me who's going to be on the air. And I will share that with you as soon as I can find her text. There it is. She said, tomorrow we're going to have dispatch supervisors Annalise Stoker and Julie Packer on the air. And next month we will have Chief Kyle Whitehead on the air here on the police department section of our show. Coming up later this week, we also have, I mentioned Zach on Wednesday. Willie Billings will be with me on Thursday. Willie has recently been reelected, second time now, as the chair of the Washington County Republican Party. And Willie has an agenda. He has something he really wants to get people to get behind. And so we're going to talk to him on Thursday. Next week, got some doctors on the air. Dr. Owens from neurology and Dr. Gardner, a heart surgeon, as we wrap up Heart Health Month. Did you know April was Heart Health Month? Yeah, I didn't either until they called and told me it was. And I'm like, oh, well, All right, I can be heart healthy. I'm finding more and more as I age that genetics is a big part of your health. Now, that's not the only factor, obviously. I have some issues, you know, with my leg and some cellulitis and stuff like that, that is not genetic. But there are other things that are very important. If your father and your grandfather or your mother and your grandmother had heart problems, there's a pretty good chance you're going to have those too. And, you know, if they died young, sorry to say, you're probably going to die young too, unless you can find out why they died young and find a way to prevent that. And sometimes it may be they died young because they were unhealthy. And if you're healthy, you can maybe fight that. But, you know, I'm lucky enough that my family, both sides of my family, strong hearts, very strong hearts. I've never had any heart issues on either side of my family. I really feel good that, my heart, my ticker's good, but I obviously have other issues, and you know, and that includes, unfortunately, that sepsis situation I've had five or six different times in the last decade. It seems like I make a trip to the hospital about every other year. Not fun. Did you hear about the house fire in Rockville over the weekend? This was I can only speculate on some of the details, but house caught fire. A dryer exploded. It was a gas dryer. So you think about the gas going to the dryer and the fire. And yeah, I don't know if it sparked the fire or what happened there. But yeah, dryer exploded. A man was burned severely and taken to the hospital. Hopefully he's going to make a full recovery. Don't know. And boy, great job by the Hurricane Valley Fire Department, Fire District folks. I think Zion National Park Fire helped as well to keep it to just one house because, you know, I mean, that thing spreads. It's getting to the point where we're starting to get real dry out there. And they did a great job of keeping that from spread. But SR9 was closed for a while on Friday. The freeway was closed for a while yesterday. A couple of different crashes. One of them was a big rollover by a semi up near Paragona, so that's up, you know, north of Cedar City. But holy cow, that could have been really brutal. Today, over kind of on the edge of Washington and St. George, they're opening a thing called George Washington Plaza, and they're unveiling tonight the larger than life size statue of George Washington. I think it's an 8-foot tall statue of George Washington in this little triangular piece. In a joint project from Washington City, St. George City, and Washington County. The ceremony takes place at 6 o'clock tonight at George Washington Plaza. That is approximately George Washington Boulevard and Washington City, I think 240 East Washington City address. There's also a BYU Fan Fest on Saturday. That's going to be fun. I wanted to take a minute and talk about vaping. A couple of years ago, I was working on a video project, and I had this this kid, and I say kid, he was like 22 or something, but to me, that's a kid. And I had to go in and spend some time in a room editing some video with him that I had recorded, and he was going to edit for me. And when I got there, there was you know how you go in a room and you could tell someone's been smoking? Well, I went in this room and I could tell it was a little off, but it didn't smell like someone had been smoking. And so I didn't worry about it. But within 5 minutes, I had a major headache. And the longer I was there, and I was probably there an hour, maybe an hour and a half, my headache got worse and worse and worse. And so by the time it was time to go home, I could barely drive because my head hurt so bad. But during the course of my being there, I was talking with the kid, and he said, listen, if it smells a little funny in here, I've been vaping. He said, they don't really like me to vape inside, but it's not technically smoking, so it's not against the law. And, you know, I really love to vape, and hope you're okay with that. And I had very little knowledge about vaping. I didn't know much about it, except for I knew that it involved tobacco. And anyway, he had just finished smoking, vaping, whatever you want to call it. And it obviously, you know, it was in the air. It gave me a major headache. And I was like, okay, well, and what are you supposed to say, right? Well, no, you can't do that. I'm leaving until you clear that. No, I didn't do that. I was just like, all right, let's get the job done. And so some facts on vaping. This is from Johns Hopkins University, one of the premier medical facilities in the world. And these are five facts that you need to know about vaping. Number one, it is not as bad as smoking. So if you, and there's a little caveat at the end of this, but if you are switching from smoking to vaping, that's a good thing. That's a step forward because it is not as bad as smoking. But according to Johns Hopkins University, vaping is less harmful than smoking, but it's still not safe. There have been an outbreak of lung injuries and deaths associated with vaping in the last 5 years. Approximately 2,807 cases of major lung injury and 68 deaths attributed to it. So, yeah, it's safer but not safe. Number two, research suggests vaping is bad for your heart and lungs. That goes along with the same thing. E-cigarettes are just as addictive as regular cigarettes. I think a lot of people think, hey, you know, I can switch to vaping and then I'll be able to kick the habit. Well, you know what? You're still ingesting, inhaling tobacco. Tobacco is an extremely addictive substance. And again, if you know anybody who vapes and they tell you, oh, it's fine, it's way better than cigarette. It is better, but not a lot better. And it's still very unsafe for you. People who smoke e-cigarettes do not get the same buzz as people who smoke regular cigarettes. So there are a lot of people say, well, you know, I do e-cigarettes, so I'm good. And well, you are, but you're not as good as the other ones. So you're looking for a hit, and then you say, well, I don't smoke cigarettes. Well, you don't, but you're still smoking something. And unfortunately, again, a new generation is getting hooked on nicotine. Among youth, e-cigarettes, especially the disposable kinds of little pens or whatever, are more popular than any traditional tobacco product, including snuff, which that was kind of the tobacco of choice. When I was a teenager, you saw all the kids with the little pinch between their cheek and gum, and they were spitting around and everything, and it was nasty. But according to a recent survey, more than 2 million U.S. middle and high school students reported using e-cigarettes in 2021, with more than 8 of 10 of these using flavored e-cigarettes. In other words, you know, they put all those really exciting flavors in there. Hey, you want a bubblegum flavored one? You want a chocolate flavored e-cigarette? Yeah, they're out there. And yeah, it's one of those things that, and this is according to Johns Hopkins. They said, what I find most concerning about the rise of vaping is that people who would have never smoked otherwise are taking up the habit. It's one thing if you convert from cigarette smoking to vaping, but it's quite another to start up nicotine use with vaping, and getting hooked on nicotine often leads then to the traditional. You start wanting more and more and more. Research from the CDC shows that vaping among youth has declined somewhat in the last few years, but as kids start to realize what it's doing to them. But kids being stuck at home under their parents' supervision during COVID is what kind of contributed, they think, to the going down of it. And now that they're back out on their own, unfortunately, it is making a comeback. And you know, I have friends, I know people who vape, and they just kind of brush it off. Hey, it's way better than smoking. It is slightly better than smoking, but it is still a tobacco habit that you've got to deal with. And it's hard to stop. When you're addicted to something, especially if you're predisposed to addiction, vaping is just as bad as any of the others. You're still getting that exposure to nicotine. And that's sad. One of our hosts, Sean Hannity, he is addicted to vaping. And as much as Sean talks about how great he is, and he is a great man, says a lot of great things, does a lot of great things, he can't kick that habit. Brutal. Hey, thanks for listening today. Again, St. George Police on tomorrow. Zach Renstrom on Wednesday. Look forward to talking to both of them. We'll see you later.